And if you think you got everything you came for, if you got everything and you don't want no more, you've gotta just keep on pushing, keep on pushing.
Well, you're listening to Stages. I'm Regina Botros, and this evening we are talking with Olivia Ansell. She's a producer, curator, choreographer, an artist. She's the head of Sydney Opera House's Contemporary Performance and has just been announced as the next Sydney Festival Artistic Director, taking over from Wesley Enoch in 2020, but stepping into that role later this year. Welcome to Stages, Olivia.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So before we get into what's happening now, I want to get a little sense of where you've come from. Now, I know that you have a bit of a history of showbiz in your family. What was it like growing up?
Look, it was certainly interesting. That's right. My parents are both in show business. My mother was a choreographer and dancer, and father was a composer. He was a jazz musician and arranger. And my grandmother was a lead singer and dancer at the Tivoli, and my grandfather was a magician and puppeteer. And then my great-grandparents worked in the circus. And ironically, they didn't want me to go into show business. They would have much preferred that I was a lawyer or an accountant.
You're proving them wrong. I think it's probably to do with money or the lifestyle, is it? Now, why do you think they were so adamant that you didn't do?
I think because their world was normal to them. So always having artists and creative people and musicians in the house, that was there every day. And I think that they fantasized about what a normal corporate life must be like. Like, it's this whole other enigma. And so it was the complete reverse of what you would normally see, which is somebody in a very conservative upbringing with a good conservative corporate job wanting, and then the child desperately wanting a career in the art. It was the other way around.
Yeah, right. So you started more as a dancer and choreographer, is that right?
I went to drama school, and obviously I studied dance intensely. And as a teenager, it just got to the point where I had to choose one or the other, because if you're dancing, it has to be quite full time, and ditto with acting. You're in a play and you go from play to play, and I was straddling the two along with violin lessons, and I dropped the violin. Wow. Which I did love, but it had to go. So I did. I pursued dance, but I did come back to theatre later. But at that stage, you know, 13, 14, I got in the zeitgeist of wanting to be a modern dancer and improve my classical skills. So that's sort of where I spent a lot of time, and had a range of incredible teachers, and used to sneak off to Bodenweiser's at Chippendale there as well.
Wow. So you're a Sydney girl through and through?
Absolutely.
Where did you go to university though? Didn't you go to Queensland?
I went up to Queensland to QUT. Mm. They had a great course at the time for performance. Mm. And to be honest, I've always looked at some of the degrees that QUT offer. There was one recently, a degree in entrepreneurship, which I thought was pretty fabulous. But it was a wonderful university, and they had a great course and great lecturers. So I did go up to Brisbane for a couple of years and then return to Sydney.
Mm. So you've been doing stuff for around the last 20 years, something like that. Was there a pivotal point in your career development? I mean, you know, to head Sydney Festival is fantastic and so exciting. Even the, you know, contemporary arts, contemporary section of the Opera House. When was this pivotal point? Do you remember a certain point where you're like, this is it. This is like, you're pivoting.
Oh, no, absolutely. There were so many points. I would say as a six-year-old going to the Sydney Festival in 1984 and watching French puppeteer Philippe Jonty. I mean, that just changed me. I was transfixed.
Oh, one of my favorites. Absolutely. Philippe Jonty. Wow.
I know. And just so beautiful. Like, the mastery of physical theatre. That was my first entree into it, if you like, in terms of growing appreciation. But as children, we were always either at the theatre because our parents were working there, or being taken to the theatre. And that makes a huge impact on a child's development creatively. But as a teenager at the age of 17, I mean, we didn't have internet. growing up or anything like that. So you'd read all the arts magazines and you'd wait at the letterbox for them to come in. And I'd read about this American dance festival that happened every summer in North Carolina.
Mm.
And you go to this school and you take 41 different styles of modern dance. There's 41.
Are you kidding? There are 41 different styles. Wow.
41 different styles, and you can't study all of them. So on the first couple of days, you get a 20-minute taster of each style in like the most craziest three-day schedule. And then you have to go up to the notice board and choose which classes you want to study for the 6 weeks.
What did you choose?
Well, I chose Merce Cunningham's class.
Yeah.
And I took class, like he was the teacher. He was your mentor. I chose Twyla Farr. I mean, this was the 90s, and these were iconic artists that I'd grown up learning their style passed down through master teachers. And I also chose to be in Judith Jamison's class, who became the artistic director of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theatre, as well as Tricia Brown. So they were the classes I studied for the 6 weeks. And look, it was life-changing experience. And, you know, in terms of the composers that you were working with and their music, we were creating work to Nyman and Reich and, you know, Meredith Monk and David Lang. Like they were that was the ilk of composers that you had access to at this school. And then all these amazing companies from around the world would fly in and perform in the evening. That was actually before I went to university, and I came straight home. I did a couple of commercial productions, one of them at the State Theatre. And I realized I have to go to university. I have to study this art form more.
I think it's interesting that we think about dance and the movement, but sometimes we do forget that there is the music. That is the ultimate, you know, you are music with your body. Would you say?
Absolutely. And also the way in which we choreograph. So as you know, Merce Cunningham's entire ethos in how he creates work is using the random and probability and chance. And so the composers adopt that too. Oh, it's fascinating. And they were so steadfast in their vision for creativity. That's classic. That's a classic postmodernist, is that you don't deviate from your technique or the way in which you create.
So do you think that's changed now?
I think so. I think we're a bit more experimental. And when we moved out of that movement, if you like, we adopted a range of different techniques. Some artists do. They have their own practice. You know, perhaps you're an artist whose practice is lived in experience and you have a process to develop that work. But I have witnessed different makers, different directors and choreographers adopting a range of styles as they collaborate from one piece to the next. Indeed.
So I imagine these, you know, Merce Cunningham and the, you know, they were instrumental in kind of guiding you or mentoring you. But was there anyone, you know, once you got back to Sydney and did, you know, after university, that was a bit of a mentor or helped you kind of or directed you along your path?
You know, I never had a formal mentor. I've been thinking about this. I learned from so many master teachers along the way as an artist, and I hear their voices in my mind all the time. But then throughout my producing career, I have looked up and sought advice from some wonderfully experienced colleagues, you know, producers, curators, CEOs, and business leaders across a diverse section of the industry whom I admire and respect. But I didn't have just the one mentor. You know, I always sort of sought advice from a range of different people. And you learn from the people around you. To that note, though, I have much gratitude for the Australia Council and their leadership programs. Both of which I completed in 2012 and in 2014. And actually, back in 2009, and this is interesting, the Australia Council ran a program with the Australian Sports Commission called SCOPE.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And I know, ironically, but it offered some retraining assistance for retiring artists and retiring athletes. And you could get access, not to a lot of money, but to small pots of money to retrain. And I was thinking about that the other day because I officially retired at 30 from performing. And that little course provided me with an advanced Excel and finance training program. They only ran about a couple of weeks each, but I often think it was the best investment I ever made, you know.
Wow. So what are some of the things that you learned from these, you know, people, CEOs, masters, people that helped you along the way? Is there anything in particular that you think is advice that you would give to someone?
Oh, there's so many different things that you learn. I mean, leadership being one of them.
Well, what What is it important to be? How? What? I know it's hard. Put it in a sentence, please. What makes a good leader?
Oh, look, empowering the people around you to be as creative and visionary as they can be. So a great leader is one that listens to their team and works as a team and collaborates as a team and empowers the ideas around you at the table. It really does take collaboration to create a wonderful festival or drive an organization forward. And for me, that's key. And I feel the same way about leading in terms of programming. You need to listen to your audience members. They're also a team. They're a member at your table, and it's really important to hear what they think and hear how they've engaged with the culture that you're programming.
So you've done so many things since, you know, your life began, it seems. But was there, is there a particular production or something that, I mean, I loved Hidden Sydney, I have to say. That was a wonderful idea and so immersive and yet so informative and historically and entertainment. There's so many levels to it, which was, you know, the King's Cross thing. But is there something for you that is kind of proud of or most challenging for you?
Oh, look, there's several, and every project has challenging aspects. A good colleague of mine said that what people don't realise, what audiences don't realise, that a show should have fallen over about 21 times before it's presented. And it does take that long sometimes to develop a good project. But my memory of home for the Perth Festival, which was an epic theatrical concert retelling the history of WA, directed by Nigel Jamieson and Richard Walley, for me will be, you know, an everlasting memory in how that show came together with 500 artists and, you know, huge collaboration with the Whadjuk and Noongar communities and under Richard Walley's wonderful care. And we didn't have a huge amount of time to produce that work. We had only, you know, the best part of 4 or 5 months. And it was a 90-minute event for 50,000 audience. So that will remain very special in my heart, along with In the Heights. Just recently, we took an independent Sydney co-op production from a 100-seat theatre, and I decided we'd put it in the Sydney Opera House Concert Hall, which has 2,700 seats. And make it one of the hallmark events for our 2018 summer program. And look, it was just wonderful. Obviously, that's Lin-Manuel Miranda's precursor to Hamilton, but an all Australian and diverse cast. And we were extremely proud of that moment at the house. And of course, Regina, I too loved Hidden Sydney and the absurdity as well. You know, 4 floors and 2 cars, 16 actors.
Wandering the streets.
It's 2 restaurants. We had 1 laneway and an audience entering every 30 minutes. So, and you know that we bumped that show in and out every single night. So it was somewhat outrageous.
Theatre is hard work. I mean, all when you say that, you've got to remember that. What do you think with this pandemic hitting and the core of performance and what do you think is the thing that it does that nothing else does?
Well, look, we turn to culture every day, be it design, literature, film, fashion, music, art, and of course theatre. And sometimes I don't think society realises how inherent and integrated the creative industry sector is to our daily life. We call on artists to support important causes. Look at the recent bushfire benefits, for example. And you know, look, I hate to say, but look at COVID, and the arts industry was one of the last groups to be acknowledged federally by any financial stimulus. And thankfully, the Australia Council and many of the local and state councils have run emergency grants programs, which I know will be vital to artists' livelihoods going forward. But I think the recognition of how culture can impact and change lives, I think we've got more work to do in that space to educate the wider public of the role that we play.
So how are the Opera House or your role in particular adapting to this change? What's happening in there? Yeah.
This year has been a lot of cancelling and and rescheduling. We've become masters at cancelling, very sadly. And now we're becoming masters of the uncertainty game. So just working out when and how and if we can reopen. We're still currently closed at the Opera House. and what it might look like when we reopen. And we are hoping to reopen soon, but of course, safety must come first. So we're in this kind of Tetris game of the hows, the whys, the whens, and it's a watch this space at the moment. I think we're all looking to Melbourne and looking to our current situation and keeping a close eye on what, you know, does or doesn't eventuate.
But there are some online things that people can catch.
Absolutely. So everything live theatre aside, we do have a really fantastic digital program called From Our House to Yours, and that's been running since the 1st of May and will continue to run until the end of September. And we've had such an interesting array of artists perform live on our opera theatre stage in the Joan Sutherland Theatre. And you can watch it free on our website. And we've had everyone from Emma Pask and her incredible jazz trio, you know, through to we had the Wiggles just recently. we've had
something for everyone.
I know there is something for everyone. We've had fantastic contemporary music acts like the Lowdown. Last week we had Simon Burke doing a benefit for the Actors Benevolent Fund, highlighting all the musicals that have performed at the Helpman, including Barbara and the Camp Dogs, that won fantastic. Best Musical last year, which is a fantastic production with incredible music by Adam Ventura. So it really is worth checking out our website in the meantime so that you don't miss the Opera House too much until we reopen.
So you're stepping into the up-and-coming Sydney Festival Artistic Director. What? How do you feel about that?
Oh, look, I'm absolutely honoured and I'm so excited. I'm invigorated, but I'm also very aware of the challenges, Regina, ahead. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've always had to be adaptable and dare we say the word, able to pivot. I couldn't be more thrilled to take the helm and follow on from Wesley's incredible vision and legacy that he will leave Sydney. And I want to continue his First Nation commitment. And I think my challenge will be a range of things from, you know, restoring the cultural life of the city, ensuring that artists get back on their feet after this year, and working out how we have international collaboration in a post-COVID world, understanding that none of us will likely be travelling even this time next year, it seems. Yeah. So get ready for a lot more Zooms and, you know, Vimeos and digital gallery.
How do you think project the look of performance in that way? I mean, what have there been interesting things that you've seen in ways that people have adapted to the times?
Well, I think the creative industries have done a wonderful job at adapting to online. We're seeing full new work premieres sweeping across our screens from around the world. In fact, I can't say which, but the Opera House is streaming a world premiere of a ballet very soon.
Wow.
There's an entirely online festival happening in October in Toronto, Fall for Dance, and they've made the festival completely online, and you can attend that festival in groups or solo viewing experiences, you know, forums, Q&As, gallery exhibits. I mean, dance is kind of, you know, made for film in a way, and with the right recording device, so is theatre. I mean, the National Theatre Live have been doing it for a very long time. Mm. So we will have to adapt and find ways. I mean, for me personally, nothing takes away from the live theatre experience. Mm-hmm. We'll be like that ancient relic in 2050. It'll be the one thing we can still enjoy that we were doing, you know, hundreds of years ago.
Telling our stories around the campfire.
exactly, you know, thousands of years ago. Like, we cannot lose the live theatre connection. But in the meantime, I think we're going to emerge from this being extremely digitally savvy, and it was a revolution that at some stage had to happen, and now it's being forced upon us.
It has become more, international.
Really, it has. Like, we had to step up to this kind of digital revolution, and this has forced us to do that. And now what we need to do is preserve the beauty of live theatre as well as the economy. We still want people to, you know, buy theatre tickets and attend theatre. So I just hope that we don't discount live theatre because we can see it for $10 online. That would be detrimental. So we've got to find a way to coexist in harmony with all these different platforms.
Yeah. So tell me, when you decided to hang up your performance side of you, like, what made you decide that to, you know, to stop performing, to retire, as you said?
Yeah, I think as an artist, when you're younger, you kind of fall into a trap of taking the contracts or the gigs because if they were offered to you, it's paid employment. And that's sort of a great way to get into the industry, is get into long running shows or, you know, short projects. But there's an element of take the gig in that, I suppose. But, as I kind of got older, I realized that it's important in one's career to make space to experiment and create new work or take a chance on something new. And often this fell secondary to paid employment, you know. So for me, the day I started to control my performing career and decide which projects I wanted to do creatively and put myself in a position of creative freedom to write or direct or curate and take a chance and make that leap, that ended up being the biggest leap in my career trajectory, because I didn't choose to stop performing, but when I started to create my own projects, people started reaching out to me and asked if I would produce theirs or curate their program. And I became quite conflicted because I was getting offered all this work creatively as a producer and a director, but I was also still performing and I couldn't manage the auditions mm-hmm. and these projects at the same time. And I was in a casting room to go for an audition and I knew I just couldn't wait to get out. And I just wanted to get back in the car and drive back to my desk and keep working on this really exciting project. And that's what I did. And I knew when I got in the car, I was never going to perform again. And and I was, you know, I was comfortable with that. I miss it on occasion, but you perform in a whole other way in these type of roles.
Absolutely. I mean, directing or, you know, curating something is a creative, absolutely creative, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And you see things from all perspectives. And sometimes being a performer in a work, I found the perspective that I was only able to access limiting, and I'd be on stage wanting to see the big picture. And I think there was one time I had written a show and I was in it and I had produced it, and it was an absolute nightmare because you're thinking, who's on the guest list? Did such and such get their complimentary drink? You know, which reviewers are in the audience? And you're trying to deliver your lines on stage. And I just said, never again.
Ways to survive. Know when it's time to leave and step back or step into someone.
You know, some don't. You know, you'd get these calls sometimes and they'd say, the producer is also the writer and the director. And you'd say, oh, golly, you know, very few have succeeded in that,
in that circus act. Oh, well, Olivia Ansell, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Regina. It's been a pleasure.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and I am sure we will talk again down the track about the festival and how things change and evolve, and I wish you luck in that new path.
Oh, thank you. I would love to speak again, so looking forward to it.
And that was Olivia Ansell, the head of contemporary performance at the Opera House, and the new, coming in 2022, the artistic director of Sydney Festival. How exciting.